Om Shanti, everyone. Welcome back. Lindsay, are you here? Could you stand up, please? Okay, everybody, on the count of three, we're going to say happy birthday. One, two, three. Happy birthday to you. Aww, very precious. It's good to have you here with us, Lindsay. You reemerged for your birthday. Very nice. Okay. So, we have a robust list of questions. So, I hope you weren't planning to leave any time before tomorrow. No, we did clump them together, though. Wonderful, wonderful questions. Thank you, everybody, for taking the time and really thinking this through. We did clump them into four main categories because there were some similarities to the questions. So I will ask Charlie, and he will share from his font of wisdom. The first set of questions were all about very practical tips. So, for example, when I have low-frequency thoughts, how do I raise them? How do I stay powerful when the world around me makes me very anxious? How do I have all of the qualities, not just peace? How do I change an atmosphere in a situation that I'm in by putting a full stop, becoming a dot? How do I practice the bodiless point? All of these were questions in the what do I do practically leaving here so that I maintain a practice, I maintain power, I discover all the other qualities in myself.
How do I improve my memory to remember all those questions?
They're all one. Practical tips, please.
Okay. You know, as I was sharing, you know, I think when we remember Baba, in a sense, I'm tuning into the highest frequency of the mind. So this very sweet, subtle connection with an absolutely pure being that's unadulterated retains truth. When I live stream that energy into the sacred space of my mind, it sustains me, it sustains the atmosphere around me, and it sustains the people I love too. I feel today so many of us worry about our family and friends because, you know, most of the world's population is doing it tough. It's a very difficult world. And sometimes we sort of try to sustain them with emotional support, talking to them a lot, encouraging them, but they always come back to square one. But spiritual support is really just keeping my attitude elevated, my vibrations elevated. We all know that when you meet somebody who's really, I don't know, got those very sweet feelings, you feel safe with them, you feel comfortable with them. So the more I connect there, because the more I remember people and problems, that's low frequency. And I just have to be really aware, the more I keep connected, my mind will be in high frequency. The more I disconnect, all the other stuff begins to impinge on my inner world. Judy, can you give me a few hints if there's any others? Maybe if we can do a question at a time, would that be possible?
There was just the regularity of practice. You know, how do I get to this point form and the bodiless and, you know, power in the self?
Yeah. I think the absolute key to this life is regularity. And the story of the hare and the tortoise is the story of the spiritual journey. Some of us are hares. A problem comes in our life and I've got to meditate, I've got to do something, and I'm just totally into it for a month or three, and then I ease off again. The tortoise does that little bit every day, every day, every day. And that's when you start to really build spirituality in your life. But I think that I would say the bread and butter of spiritual practice, the fundamental, is the art of detaching from my body. And this is really a practice which I think we can do not just when we meditate but during the day, because the more I'm detached from my body, the more I become detached from everything. In this world, I'm loving, I'm engaged, I'm responsible, I'm connected, but I don't feel so affected by everything. And literally, letting go, identifying with what I do. That's not who I am. Stepping back from that. Letting go, identifying with my labels. Completely, that's not who I am. It's my temporary identity. Stepping back, withdrawing to this point. There's nothing smaller than the human soul. And if I just go through this process of letting go, withdrawing, stepping back, feeling I'm just this minute spark, and I am completely distinct from matter. I am the consciousness, this body. You know, in science I heard recently, in biology they're saying that this body is made of 30 trillion cells. I don't know how they count them, I find that staggering. 30 trillion. The soul is more subtle than one cell. The soul's non-material. Just start to really envisage, learn who I am. The more I'm bodiless, I open the door to spiritual experience. I taste a quality of peace. And if every day I keep practicing, keep educating myself, I'll learn this art of letting go, becoming detached, feeling peace, and feeling less and less influenced by the scenes of life, the opinions, the behaviours, the attitudes, all the stuff that often just affects me so deeply.
We also talked about the regularity of practice, just every morning setting some time aside to meditate, and throughout the day the practice of I am a soul, I have a body. Anytime you feel energy inside of you rising up, you know, I am a soul, I have a body. And going to your meditation center.
Good idea. You know, to me, to practice regularly is an act of love for myself. And I think at first you think I should wake up in the morning. After a while you want to wake up in the morning because the feeling is so sweet. And once you make it's like physical fitness, when you're regular, you get very fit. But if it's with spirituality, it's the same thing. The more you practice, go to the center. Because when we leave here, we've been surrounded by this extraordinary atmosphere. We've been held in this atmosphere. We're going to go outside. And I often feel the reason why we sometimes feel anxious, worried, fearful, is we drink in the vibes of the world. This is the culture of our world. And unless I have a regular practice, I'll find my mind starts to absorb the vibes of the world once again, and I feel that discomfort. And that's why if you keep your practice morning and night, to me though, there's three approaches to meditation. It's a hobby, I just do it occasionally. It's good. It's a discipline. And I find people meditate, you know, so religiously every morning and night. But as soon as they stop meditating, their thoughts revert to their old thinking. So you just go back to your old thinking. The third one is a lifestyle where I really, you know, my whole attitude to life, I live. Who am I? I am a peaceful soul. It becomes who I am. And that's my attitude to everything I do. So I live as a peaceful soul.
I know for me did anyone hear Ram Prakash speak about his experience in 9/11 when he was in the... I think you have to turn that one off. Did anyone hear his experience in 9/11 when he was in the World Trade Tower and it came down and he was in it on the 84th floor and he walked himself down in the dark and with the smoke and the screaming and the... And he said he was soul conscious, but he didn't try. It's like he just found himself completely silent, encased in a little bubble in his mind, which is essentially what we do when we meditate. And he said that that's when he realized how every drop of effort, every tiny little bit of practice to be soul conscious, as Charlie just described, it added up. And it was available when he needed it. He didn't have to try in that moment. And so I think it's a muscle that strengthens through practice, right? And then when you need it, it's there. In the moment of needing it, you don't make practice. You have to practice beforehand. So I found that very reassuring. I heard his story when I was a very new Brahmin, and I wasn't feeling, or a new student here of the BKs, and I wasn't feeling like I was really getting this soul conscious. I was trying, but then I would go back to regular thoughts and back and forth. And then I heard his story, and I realized, I'm just going to keep trying. I'm just going to keep practicing. And then it will add up little by little over time in those situations where we most need it. So practice, practice, practice. Yeah. So that was one set of questions. Anything else on the practical tips to keep the energy from this place going when we get back home?
I think obviously I would commit to myself in a sense that I want to sustain what I'm taking, but be prepared that I'm going to walk back into atmospheres, vibrations, people going through their different things. And so I think it's really important to practice a resilience that maybe the language I like to use is detachment. To me, detachment is one of the most important spiritual qualities, but unfortunately one of the most misunderstood. Because often detachment sounds like I'm aloof, disconnected. But actually, spiritually, we often attach the word loving, loving and detached. Detachment means to be very loving, very caring, very close, very considerate, very kind, but learning to be uninfluenced. And I think this practice of engagement, but detached at the same time, is such a protection for your spirituality. And the more you become detached from your body, you will be detached from the influence of a lot of external stuff too. That basic practice of becoming the soul is essential. But detachment really, in a sense, gives you the inner freedom to practice your spirituality without drinking in the influence. I often think, you know, to become an observer, not an absorber. Our body conscious mind is, I just take in everything. But the soul conscious mind, I begin to observe things that I can't change. So many things I can't change. Why I've become disturbed? I may try to make a difference positively, but I observe rather than absorb. I think that's such an important practice. And the more you feel close to God, almost automatically you're pulled beyond influence. It's a natural consequence of a deep relationship with God, and you can feel less influenced.
We will, you will all receive a link to all the classes that were here this past week, including all of the meditation commentaries in the morning. So if there was one in there that particularly you found very, very helpful, you will have it at home to be able to use again. somebody asked, would this week have been as spiritually intoxicating if it wasn't for all the other amazing souls here at Mount Abu and the connections and the conversations we had? This is very much an individual journey, the spiritual journey, and yet keeping yourself in good company really helps. So finding the good company for you, if it is at your local BK Meditation Center, there are friends in your community who you like to meet and have tea with and discuss spiritual things. But very much the atmosphere has helped a lot this week because we are in good company with others who are also attempting to learn, to understand, to become soul conscious. Anything you would say to that, Charlie?
Sometimes we refer to this path as the family path because often the idea, if I really want to engage with a deep spiritual practice or a real living relationship with God, the idea is I have to separate from mainstream society, live in a monastery, go on a mountain, disconnect. But I think what we learn here is to be in the thick of life and practice my spirituality. And I'm always amazed the atmosphere that all of us create together. Because this atmosphere, I think all our positive, pure thoughts, we're all generating, and then we all drink from this atmosphere. I mean, I think we can all feel the power of the atmosphere that has been created. Sometimes they talk about the four pillars of Raja Yoga, the support for my spiritual practice. One of them is good company. And that's why I think it's really important, as Judy has said, to try to keep engaged with BKs in your country, the center, as much as possible, because it reminds you, and that good company, you know, keeps that sort of elevated feeling and elevated vibration. I think it's very important to sustain myself.
I know in some countries they have regular meetings every 2 or 3 months where they gather all the peace of mind guests back together and they share stories and inspire each other. So that might be possible in your country as well.
Maybe not in places like Canada and Australia, yeah, where you have to fly 6 hours to meet other people, but some countries it's possible.
Okay, so is that good for practices? Yeah? Okay. So now the next set of questions were about God. And some 4 or 5 really nice questions here. One of them was how to distinguish between a message from God and one of a temptation. Or I might add my own thoughts.
You know, I think we have to be a highly experienced meditator to really distinguish those feelings. But I think that sometimes when we meditate, we get a strong sense of something, a strong message. If it's really from the divine, if you put it into action, it will just happen instantly and powerfully. But sometimes our own desires and our own feelings creep in. And personally, I would check it with someone really experienced. Someone who's like a mentor or a spiritual friend. What do you feel about this? Because it's a very, very fine line. Am I getting a clear message? Or is it my own desire or my own wish?
Yeah, thoughts that come from God tend to have a quiet confidence to them. They don't need any proving, just very subtle and sweet. Give us some practical tips to increase our love with the divine.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful question because to me this is the essence. Why? Because the more I taste that, I sometimes feel there's 8 billion human souls, 8 billion souls in the world at the moment. And if we count the Supreme Soul as one, that soul is the most attractive, the most lovable. And in a way, the whole journey, spiritual journey, is learning how absolutely attractive and lovable that being is. And so it's not just a point of life I'm meditating on, because that's dry and my mind will wander. It's almost like discovering the personality of God. And one of the things which all the centers in the world do is read a lesson every single morning, which is like the words or the thoughts of God, which I feel really help build up the personality so that I can really engage with a real living, if I can say, lover of the soul. Because automatically, the more I fall in love, the deeper the link, that's when really the whole of the spiritual life kicks in an extremely powerful way. So that's the real quest, I would say. Because I think often it becomes just an intellectual belief. Sometimes I think I recognize God with my head. And it's comfortable that God's a soul. God's an ocean of love and peace. But when I recognize with my heart, that's when the power of this spiritual life really kicks in. The relationship becomes a natural friendship, a natural lover, a natural parent. I really develop these relationships in a natural way in my life.
Yeah, I think just keeping the relationship, keeping the communication channel open, speaking throughout the day to God in my mind and heart, and staying awake to the subtle messages that come back. Yeah.
You know, sometimes I do feel that many of us have a belief that God is the ocean of love. And even that belief is something which gives us a good feeling. But to really connect with the ocean of love, I feel if you sit in the early morning very quietly, sit in front of God, this supreme being, or as Baba, because Baba's more affectionate, and allow yourself to be loved, completely loved. Give yourself permission. It's like becoming a little child. The more egoless, the more you can feel love. But if I can't feel it, don't panic. This is the deep work of spiritual life, because we hold these beliefs about myself. And sometimes I have the thought that we're old souls. We've gone into all the temples and churches and mosques or whatever for so many lifetimes, and there's sort of, if you think, God, you're so pure, you're so great, you're so high, I'm so low, I'm so impure. We've reinforced this profound sense of inferiority and unworthiness. And this is the block to God's love. And this is the deep work to remove that block from around my heart so that my heart is really connected. This sense of inferiority is extraordinarily powerful sometimes. It's sort of, I'm not worthy to feel this love. This is a very deep thing, and I would say the major obstacle to my natural loving relationship with the divine.
Did you ever feel that, and how did it go away?
Yes, a little bit. I wouldn't say a lot, but I began to think that the religious approach is become pure and you can know and connect with God. So you have to do all this effort and sometimes pressure. But the spiritual approach is know God and that will make you pure. It's my right. And it's like, you know, to me the biggest challenge in the spiritual life is to deal with my lack of self-value. And there's sort of, we live in a world where we're so confident. I find we're educated to be confident, to pass exams, speak in front of people, perform, organize, manage. It doesn't mean I like who I am. This profound sense of lack of inferiority is this massive block to be a child is an equal. But when I sit in front more as an inferior being, I can't feel the love. This is a really deep journey, and it's just slowly, slowly. I sometimes feel that we hold these beliefs about myself, that I'm not really lovable, so I can't feel love. I'm not good enough, no matter how well I do. Sometimes people are brilliant at things. They always feel it's never, ever, ever good enough. And this pattern is just so deep in the soul at the end of at this time. And this is the block to really taking in the true love of God, which is the power that genuinely heals me deeply into the core of my being. This is the deep work, removing these beliefs, this sense of inferiority, these powerful beliefs that have been sort of, I've identified with for a long time.
So the drip method, every day, drip by drop, drip by drop, and slowly the block dissolves. Yeah.
It's like, I think it's my right. It's a human right to taste this love. It's my right.
Okay, one last on the topic of God. How do I use divine power?
By having compassion, by forgiving, by being understanding, by supporting, by giving respect, by letting go, by putting others forward. It's like, I think when I come into self-respect, I have so much power, and that self-respect starts to make this power very impractical, especially in human relationships. I think that's where this, it's a soft power, it's a gentle power. Often the power says nothing, it's just being. You know how sometimes you're with some people and their face or just their vibration just shifts something inside you because it's a high frequency of thought. I find it amazing what I have in my mind people feel. When there's benevolence, people feel safe with me. Or if there's some other vibration, sometimes they feel a little bit edgy. Now, that's probably my issue too, which I need to change. But people think that no one really knows what happens in my mind. I don't agree at all. I think your mind is like a big billboard on the road. People feel your subtle feelings. Some people wonder why people don't love me. Because sometimes I carry stuff in my head, sort of negative or criticism or memories. You know, all the stuff of my memories. You know, you meet somebody and it sort of triggers all your past interactions, which sometimes not so good. So you look through that filter of semi-negativity. They don't feel close. And it's like the more you feel close to God, the more you practice self-consciousness, I think the quality of the vibrations make people feel calm and safe and close.
Okay, on God. Okay, next one. This is very interesting. This is karmic accounts when leaving the body. Some people pass away peacefully in their sleep. Others, they go through extended sickness. Is it because they need to experience the illness, learn from the illness, or have the kindness from others as a payment of karmic debt? What explains the difference in someone's passing away story?
Goodness me, what to say. I think that if someone goes through extended suffering, sometimes when they're about to die, sometimes there's a subtle misunderstanding of the law of karma that they've not been such a good person. That's not true at all. There's no doubt it's incredibly good karma just to leave my body in my sleep. But sometimes, there's a lot of settlement. I often wonder, in the old days before we had this really high-tech medicine, When you were ready to die, you just died. But these days, you know, you're kept alive, kept alive, kept alive. And often it's really not only physically incredibly uncomfortable, but mentally and emotionally it's just a horrible experience. You're like a vegetable with tubes all through you. And I wonder really, you know, because the contemporary culture is life at all costs, because we don't understand the continuity of the soul. We don't allow the soul just to leave its body. It'll be reborn. So, yes, yeah, sometimes people do suffer a death, but I know with my own father, he was 92. He got cancer, and the doctors said to him, you know, we can do this, we can do that, we can do all these things. He listened to them for half an hour. He said, I'm fine, I'm ready to go. He just like, you know, and I think, so I wouldn't say it's a real indication of bad karma or good karma, to be frank. But when we suffer, we definitely settle karma. Mm. Yeah. And, you know, the idea, we often feel that when the soul is reborn in the womb, the soul thinks about its past life. Sometimes people say that the soul promises God, I'm going to do it better next time. But when we come out, you know, we come back into our body conscious habits again, and we start to forget a lot of those aims which we had in the womb. Mm.
Thank you. There are two questions here that are kind of related to each other. One is about how do I make sense of the difference between the knowledge I heard this week and some of the things I believed before? How do I manage the conflict between previous knowledge and this new knowledge? And the other one, do I need to renounce other religions when practicing Raja Yoga?
You know, my experience with the BKs is that we offer with love, a lot of love and a lot of respect. And each one is given the space to decide what is important for me and what is meaningful for me. And so, how can I say we offer it? Because, yes, there's no doubt we feel that if you practice this, you'll receive a lot in your life. And yet, at the same time, we don't really believe, if I can use the word, in conversion. Because each soul has its own unique part, and what is meaningful and relevant to me is not so much meaningful or relevant to others. So I think, I know from Sydney, I used to bring in the 1980s and 90s a Christian minister, and he absolutely loved it here. He came here 9 times, and yet he went back, he felt it supported his ministry. He felt the spiritual power he got from here. This has happened all over the world. I know in Sri Lanka there was an incredible Buddhist priest. I went to his temple in the south of Sri Lanka once, and he at the age of 16 lived in the jungle in silence for 6 years on his own. And you could feel the vibration. He loved what he received here, but he remained in his practice. So I love that big heart that if this enhances the quality of your life, wonderful. If you decide to take it on everything, that's also fine. But each one absorbs to their level and practices or takes what is perhaps relevant or pertinent to my particular life or my particular belief system. So I think feel very easy, very easy. I've been to the Philippines many times, and is there anyone from the Philippines here? Yes. We have a wonderful retreat center up near in Tagaytay, which is a beautiful volcano. It's an extraordinary place. And there's 75 religious communities there, 75 retreat centers. 74 are Catholic and one is the Brahma Kumaris. And a lot of the nuns and priests, I've been there a few times, they come and they meditate, and they love it. And some just feel maybe it helps me with my link with God or whatever. So, yeah. Even Brahma Baba, the founder, when Christians or Muslims or people of different denominations came, he gave them great love and respect. Nothing is forced.
Okay, and then we had some relationship questions, and they were around other people in my life. So if I'm in a relationship that isn't working so well, or if I'm concerned to help someone else who isn't doing well, how can I help others? And then how can I be a bestower, especially if I'm in need myself?
You know, I feel the whole philosophy here is to help others, first help myself. And really, fundamentally, we are all in families, communities, workplaces, where so many are struggling, aren't they? It's just it's a really challenging world. And I feel that the most beautiful life, I believe, personally, is to feel close to God and be benevolent to all. You know, if you see the body of others and their behavior, you can often get quite irritated, feel so frustrated and think, why are they like, you know, all this thinking. But if you really see beyond the body and see there's a soul on a journey, the soul is under the influence of its own nature, its own past story, its suffering. Now, if I have negative thoughts, it's almost like I increase their suffering. And if I can have benevolent thoughts, but the law says the closer you are to people, the harder it is to have genuinely benevolent thoughts. And this is, you know, really, I think, to make that effort to really try to understand people deeply. You know, when I see beyond the actions and the behavior, see the soul under its influence, I think rather than judgment, I can kick in and have merciful feelings. What do you feel, Judy? But I think, you know, it takes spiritual strength to really to be able to do that. But my observation of myself, if I can let go negativity, negative thoughts, and have love and mercy deep down, how do you feel about yourself? You know it's right, no matter how people are behaving. And the main question in all our centers, in all corners of the world, is how to deal with difficult people. That's the main question in every center of the world, because we're empty. And because we're empty, I can feel someone creeping up behind me at the moment. You know, I sometimes think of the mind like a vacuum cleaner. We're empty. So if you give me love, if you give me respect, if you give me praise, if you insult me, if you criticize me, if you defame me, we absorb everything because I'm empty, and then I blame you. I have no resilience and no capacity not to take that stuff. What we're doing is building up my strengths. And then, you know, I feel the more I'm self-conscious, the more I will be like this detached observer. And then you can really act in a constructive way to support people, help people, love people, etc. Detachment, I think, if you reframe it in your mind, is a huge virtue at this time. But you need to reframe it. It is not being disconnected or aloof. Detachment increases your capacity to love. Why? Because when someone behaves badly, if you're detached, you can love them. When they behave well, you can love them. When they behave badly, you can give love too. And then when you give love, sometimes they listen to you more as well. If they feel you're supporting them, you're caring for them. But if they feel your irritation, we can't help.
Yeah, thank you, Charlie. Yeah, I feel like because this is the path of self-mastery, that the question I always ask myself is, what is being poked in me? So I take the attention immediately off of the other person and onto what in me has been stirred up that needs a little bit of healing or needs to be understood accurately.
Can I ask you, how long did it take you to really do that? Because the habit is so deep, isn't it, to project back that you are the person giving me.
I feel like I came to this organization already doing that. Yeah, so it wasn't new to me, but I have more power to see more quickly what it is in me that got stirred and then to replace it with the virtue or the other quality. And I think it comes as part of many of us. I mean, I was a social activist for a long time, but I find many of us that end up meditating with the Brahma Kumaris, it's because we care so much about the world. And I think this heightened sense of responsibility served me well in that practice, that I could say to myself, I'm responsible for how I feel. What is it that got triggered in me? So I don't blame the others very quickly. Or if I do, I catch myself very quickly. Because it's uncomfortable to blame others, I find. For me. Yeah. And you?
Well, whenever I find my mind, and I think it's a habit for a long time of projecting or blaming, I feel I've stepped out of truth, and I'm under the influence of, I'm deceiving myself. And once there was a little saying, the one who follows the path of truth sees the self. The one who follows the path of falsehood is watching others. It's a world you can get lost in, and it can make you so angry and so bitter and so hurt, and you feel it's real.
I think this is connected to this. Maybe it's a segue, Charlie, but this one. When I cannot find it in my mind to forgive someone, how can I just stop thinking about him or her? So again, it's around anger and pain when somebody has done something to hurt either self or someone else. Mm. What to do with this forgiveness thing if I can't?
Mm. You know, I think that in all honesty, for most of us, forgiveness is a really difficult thing, isn't it? It's easy to talk about, but to me, the capacity to forgive increases by my closeness to God. And I feel the love of God massages the heart to such a level. They sort of, you know, the thought comes to me sometimes, how long do I want to go just in this resentment and inner pain that I carry, hurting myself when I can't forgive? And I really think, for me, is the more I feel this relationship with God, the more capacity I give myself the strength to be able to really let go and allow that other person to be who they are. But I feel that the problem, and I maybe touched on it this morning for many people, is that if I forgive somebody who's really done wrong action, is absolutely clear their behavior was not right, then am I validating that bad behavior? And that's where I think it's absolutely possible to say, I don't agree with what happened. They're not my values, they're not my principles, but for my peace and my way forward in life, I'm going to let go and forgive. Because I think, you know, the more I can't forgive, I block my capacity to love. Nothing will make me healthier than to express love. If I think, oh, you've done this, not going to love you. You've done this, not going to love you. I keep suppressing that energy that's really going to make me healthy and happy.
Mm. I think sometimes we think we should forgive faster than we're ready to. Like, I don't think if I'm ready to forgive, then there's a reason. There's something in me that still is hurt. And honestly, God is the best healer. So sitting with God and saying all of that and admitting it, at least that's honest. and then the healing happens, then I might be able to feel less intense about the other person. But I think too quickly to forgive, it's like I'm not ready yet. So I do need to do a little inner work first. That's my thought anyways. Okay, one more. Can I improve karma of my close ones by practicing Raj Yoga?
Yes. Because you think example is the most powerful thing. Leadership is example, and when leaders are the example of elevated values and behavior, that will influence the actions of family and people close to me. And that's, I would say, the story of this organization, in a way that, you know, Brahma Baba, you heard the story from Sister Jenti, wonderful story. But he did such deep work on himself, was such an extraordinary example. And I think, you know, there's the intellectual teaching, the knowledge which we've been listening to, but the real teaching is the example, isn't it? That's what, when you see someone as a living example walking their talk, that helps our karmas become, you know, we try to do similar karmas because we love them and we want to learn from them. So definitely the way we can influence others is to be a good example. So many mothers say, I'd love my child to learn meditation. My answer always is, you do it properly first and they'll automatically. Because children learn from who you are, not so much what you say. So they connect with your inner being. And when your inner being is more settled and pure, automatically. And I often feel that if a mother or father really takes their self-respect back and lives in self-respect, that is the greatest gift to a child. They will learn how to live in my own self-value, which is probably the most precious thing in life. It's a great gift to a child or a family member.
Yeah, I know. My two kids say now, as grown-ups, the best thing I ever gave them was a values-based life, which is quite a good thing, yeah. Okay, will we ever achieve immortality in our current form?
Yes. Is that enough? Yeah, I mean, the soul is immortal. The soul always exists. And in a sense, that is within me at this second, but because I'm attached to my temporary self, I fear losing it. So I, you know, my mortality is one of the biggest issues of life today, just facing death. But it's like Judy was saying about forgiveness, it's a slow process, really. The more I don't just know and believe I'm a soul, but I actually experience the reality of who I am, I start to see the whole continuity of life, how the soul takes a body and leaves the body. And sometimes I have the thought, you know, you're born and say, this is my mum, this is my dad, these are my brothers, these are my sisters, you know, your family, you grow up, this is my city, my country, you're building an identity. And these are my children, these are my grandchildren. You build up this incredible network of an identity around this body. In 1 second you leave. The soul flies on. It goes back into the womb. I'm reborn. This is my mum, this is my dad, these are my brothers. It's an incredible, I am immortal. And what we're learning here is to experience that. And yesterday, was it the day before, Sister Jenti was talking about the Golden Age. In the Golden Age, there's really no concept of death. It's just change. Because there's a natural understanding that I am an eternal being taking on a wonderful costume to express through in life. It's a wonderful marriage, the soul and the body. But I'm not a body. I'm going to leave it and I will continue. And I think to lose the fear of death is such a freedom in life. It's a journey, though. It's definitely a journey. Who met Daddy Jenki, can I ask here? Yeah. Do you remember her book, I Know How to Live and I Know How to Die? And I remember I was often in meetings with her and she was over 100. Many times, or when I say many, a few times, I heard her say, I can go any minute, if just like that I can go, but I'm ready. She'd say, I'm ready. Mm. Yeah. Because it's so deep in us to attach ourselves to our temporary form. We should love our body, care for our body, keep it healthy. But the more I'm attached, the more I build fear and insecurity into my life. That's the law of life, isn't it? Dependencies create so much internal suffering. Mm.
Thank you, Charlie. That we made our way through the stack of the questions, minus a couple of fine points on the knowledge, which we thought we would let you ask back at your centers. You know, but can I ask you a quick question? I'm going to ask you to think of four different categories, and I'd like you to put your hand up for the category you felt had the greatest impact on your visit here this past week. One category, knowledge. So the knowledge you received this week, how many of you would say that was? I bet you can pick two or three categories if you want. But so knowledge is one. So the knowledge and wisdom that you received here has had an impact on you. Hands up for those, okay? The meditation, practice and experiences, hands up. That was the meditation itself, the teaching of it, the experience of it. Wonderful. How many would say the atmosphere? Yeah, you can put up your hand for all. That's okay. And the fourth one, which I heard a lot actually, was the yogis here, the service people, the sevadaris, how they seem to embody the knowledge, the atmosphere, the practice. So the walk your talk of the people who were here. Okay, look at that. Wow, wonderful. Fantastic. Thank you, everyone. So I think we're coming to the end of this particular session, but Terry, if you can stand up, please, all of you with cards. We have power cards for you each to take one with you if you would like. And these were brought very specially from Holland as a gift for each of you. So as you're leaving the hall, I think Rosemary's at the end of the line here. Terry will be over here. And Margo, where will you be placed? At the back on the other side. So please take one if you would like. And somehow it will be reflective of the power you are taking with you from this retreat back into your world and will be a support for that. I believe we have an afternoon for you to pack, for you to wander, for you to sit in Bubba's room, for you to journal, for you to sit in the Daddy Jenki park, to just do your own thing, be with yourself, be with your new friends, be with God, and we'll see you back here at 6:30 this evening. Mohini Didi, who is the administrative head of this organization, has come from New York to be the icing on the cake, the final 1 hour of our retreat together. So please be here for that, 6:30 to 7:30. Okay? And I think Charlie would like to do a 2-minute meditation before we go. Is that? Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Let me sit quietly. And revisit the foundation of becoming strong once again. Visualize yourself as a minute spark, sitting lightly in the center of the forehead. And as a child, look through the eye of my mind and see the eternal lover of the soul, a radiant jewel of light, of love, of purity and power. Feel these vibrations enter the core of your being. Just feel them go so deep inside, healing me, caressing me, loving me so deeply. But I have the courage to change myself. If each morning when I return, I sit in soul consciousness, and feel this true divine love, step by step, my spiritual power will return. Om Shanti.